This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Thomas Barrack is a billionaire real estate mogul, also a close friend and sometimes business partner to Donald Trump. Built his housing empire by swooping in and purchasing foreclosed homes during the recession. A new report from Reveal of the Center for Investigative Reporting shows the inner workings of that empire. Reveal found a system that exploits tenants through a variety of legal and financial maneuvers. Aaron Glanz is senior investigative reporter with Reveal and the lead journalist in this report. Aaron Glanz, welcome to the State of Things.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about Thomas Barrack and this company that he formed, Colony Starwood Homes. Tell us how it works.
Well, I started to wonder, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners are wondering, why is it that if the economy has been in recovery for 8 years or so now, why is it that the home ownership rate in America kept going down? And who was it who was benefiting from this? All these houses that used to be owned by people like you and me didn't just disappear in a poof of smoke. Somebody bought them. And so I started to investigate, and I found out that one of the big beneficiaries of the Great Recession, the housing bust, the foreclosure mess, was this guy, Thomas Barrack, who's a Southern California billionaire and a very close friend, as you mentioned, of Donald Trump.
And tell us how it works, because, obviously the trick in capitalism, buy low, sell high. And so if you've got the billion and you had a few bucks left over, even after the Great Recession, there's some bargains out there, right? So he capitalized
right.
on that.
And we, if you think back to that point, it was almost impossible to get a home loan. Right. So, if people like you or me who wanted to buy one of these homes that was relatively cheap because the economy was down, we couldn't get credit at that time oftentimes. But people like Barrack, who had, piles of cash at their disposal, were able to swoop in and buy thousands of foreclosed homes all over the country. And the rental empire that he built eventually through Colony Starwood Homes. The tenants who live in these properties know it as Waypoint. They pay their rent to Waypoint Homes, but it's owned by Colony Starwood Homes. It eventually has 30,000 homes all over the country, including over 1,000 in North Carolina. And what they would do is after they would buy the homes, they would bundle them into these giant mortgage-backed securities, in essence taking out a giant loan against the value of thousands of properties at once and generate even more money so they could buy even more homes. So in our story, we looked at one particular home in Los Angeles, which they had bought on the courthouse steps for $180,000, and it had been bundled with about 3,400 other homes into a giant $514 million mortgage-backed security funded by J.P. Morgan Chase. So it's just like you might want to take a little bit of money out of your house to fix your kitchen or your bathroom. They took $500 million out of 3,000 houses and used it to buy even more houses, taking them off the housing market so that regular people couldn't buy them, and instead their tenants are paying them rent that pays off this huge debt.
Now talk about those rental agreements, because therein lies another story.
Well, one of the things that this financialization of housing has done is it's really put a pressure on Colony and the other private equity firms that do this, like Blackstone, for example, has a brand called Invitation Homes. Any landlord wants to make money off of their rental property, but when you have these security deals and you have a publicly traded company and the homes, the ownership of the homes is actually being cut up and sold into tranches to investors who are looking for a good return, the company tracks their rent increases very aggressively and, increases the rent on every year on every tenant and pushes a lot of the maintenance responsibility for the buildings onto the tenant when you read the leases. And another thing that we found, as they try to maximize all the profit that they possibly can out of these properties, is that they're very, very quick to file eviction notices. In Fulton County, Georgia, in Atlanta, which is one of their largest markets, the Federal Reserve Bank found that they had filed eviction notices against one-third of their tenants.
Hmm.
And when I went to Atlanta and I went door to door and I interviewed tenants who had received these eviction notices, one of the interesting things that I found was that these eviction notices were not necessarily about kicking people out of the properties. It was more about the late fees and attorney's fees and other charges that Colony would then pile on to the tenants on top of their rent when they were just a few days late. You know, a big company doesn't really benefit by kicking people out because then they have a vacancy and they lose out on the rent. But if they can pile on these fees and have them in a cycle of late fees and eviction notices, which is exactly what happened to many of the tenants that I interviewed, then they can get their rent, increase their rent, and on top of that, make fees. And Colony's filings with the SEC show that last year they made $26 million in fees and tenant clawbacks, like when they keep a tenant's security deposit, in just 1 year.
So as the story of Makita Edwards, I think, is a pretty good example of that. Makita in Atlanta.
Yes, this is a 25-year-old mother who was living in this house that was really falling apart. In the first few months she lived there, they went without heat. They had a leaky roof. When they didn't fix the leaky roof, a ceiling fan fell on her bed where she was lying with her newborn baby. And although it was extremely difficult to get the company to come out and fix these problems, the company had no problem at all aggressively filing eviction notices. And so they had to move into this property very quickly last September. And when I looked at the court record, they received an eviction notice, this family dealing with all of these problems in their house. This company, founded by the president's best friend, Tom Barrack, filed an eviction notice against them each of the first six months that they lived there. And every single month, they ended up paying about $200 in fees on top of their rent.
So this is important. As you pointed out earlier, the only way that especially working class folks can accumulate wealth, not just income, but wealth, you get a piece of the rock. You own a home. And of course, the Great Recession wrenched and squeezed all of that wealth out of very many low income and working class people who had just bought a piece of the rock. And now, as you say, it brings it back in the hands of billionaires who had cash anyway and survived the whole thing. Talk about his relationship with Donald Trump, not only a best friend, business partner, and very supportive of the president and his son-in-law, too.
Yeah, and this is a guy who has known Donald Trump for 30 years, ever since he helped Donald Trump buy the Plaza Hotel in New York City. Tom Barrack introduced Donald Trump. He introduced Ivanka Trump at the Republican convention. He was one of the very first business people to endorse Donald Trump in his run for president. You remember that when Trump first declared for president, nobody wanted to endorse him. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with him. And there were only kind of a few rogue businessmen who stepped in to support him. And Barrack was one of those people. And he raised $23 million for his campaign. And then he raised another $107 million, more than $100 million for the inauguration, which he planned. And if you go watch the inauguration, you go online and look at a video, you can see Tom Barrack standing there in a blue scarf right behind the Trump family, almost looking over Donald Trump's shoulder as he's sworn in as president. These guys are extremely close. He's lunched with Trump at the White House since Trump was inaugurated. He told CNN they talk every day.
Found a lawyer for Donald Trump, didn't he, when Trump, all those fraud charges that eventually closed Trump University.
He's on the bat phone with Donald Trump. He helped him find a lawyer with the Trump University case. And more recently, as you alluded to, when Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, was going to lose his giant Fifth Avenue skyscraper in New York City, he helped him avoid foreclosure. So he is at the center of nearly – if you read any article, you start to pay attention to this name, Thomas Barrack, and you start to read the stories about scandals out of the White House. You often see him in the fifth or sixth paragraph. For example, the Russia scandal that's going on now. Tom Barrack introduced Donald Trump to Paul Manafort, his campaign manager, who is, you know, allegedly one of the people at the center of this Russia scheme. So whatever it is, if it involves Donald Trump, dollars to donuts, Tom Barrack is in the room.
Aaron, before I let you go, we've mentioned North Carolina. Talk about the investment, what kind of homes we're talking about and where those homes are located in North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, so this is the important thing about this company is that in the past, and we call his behavior tantamount to a modern-day slumlord in our story. But if you think about the way slumlords usually operate, you're usually talking about apartment block buildings in the inner city. This guy and his company have traditionally bought homes out in the suburbs. You know, they saw a great opportunity to amass suburban homes, which were foreclosed on during the Great Recession. So in North Carolina, in Charlotte and Raleigh, they have bought mostly 2-3-bedroom homes out in the suburbs. They like to target good school districts so that they can charge high rents and they can think that they'll have high occupancy because that's where people want to live. And they have targeted North Carolina as an area for growth in their rental empire Colony has. So they figure that in Atlanta, where they own about 6,000 homes, that they're at saturation point there. So they're looking to Charlotte and Raleigh as a potential growth. Maybe they grow that up to the sort of level that they're at now in some other markets like Atlanta and Phoenix and Southern California.
Aaron, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for this report.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Aaron Glantz, senior investigative reporter with Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting. Just ahead, we'll meet Becky Holmes, who came to Duke as a dance major but ended up looking at food and food security. We'll talk about it in the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.